Hi, Dave Emery here, side two of For the Record program number 803. Walking the Snake in Ukraine. This is being recorded on July 27th of the year 2014. Again, for people who missed side one, the title alludes to the Nazi track Serpent's Walk, which refers to Nazism coming to America through the manipulation of public opinion. If we concluded side one, reading from an article from The Nation magazine of June 30th of 2014 by Stephen F. Cohen, The Silence of American Hawks About Kiev's Atrocities. And we're going to plunge right back in where we left off. Even The New York Times, which, like the mainstream American media generally, has deleted the atrocities from its coverage, described survivors in Slovyansk, quote, as living in the Middle Ages, unquote. Meanwhile, an ever-growing number of refugees, disproportionately women and traumatized children, have been fleeing across the border into Russia. In late June, the UN estimated that as many as 110,000 Ukrainians had already fled to Russia, and about half that many to other Ukrainian sanctuaries. It is true, of course, that anti-Kiev rebels in these regions are increasingly well-armed, though lacking the government's arsenal of heavy and airborne weapons, organized and aggressive, no doubt, with some Russian assistance, whether officially sanctioned or not. But calling themselves self-defense fighters is not wrong. They did not begin the combat and their land is being invaded and assaulted by a government whose political legitimacy is arguably no greater than their own, two of their large regions having voted overwhelmingly for autonomy referenda, and unlike actual terrorists, they have not committed acts of war outside their own communities. The French adage suggested by an American observer seems applicable. This animal is very dangerous. If attacked, it defends itself. Among the crucial questions rarely discussed in the U.S. political media establishment, what is the role of the neo-fascist factor in Kiev's anti-terrorist ideology and military operations? Skipping down. Independent Western scholars have documented the fascist origins, contemporary ideology, and declarative symbols of Svoboda and its fellow traveling right sector. Both movements glorify Ukraine's murderous Nazi collaborators in World War II as inspirational ancestors. Both, to quote Svoboda's leader Oleh Tyanovuk, call for an ethnically pure nation purged of the Moscow Jewish mafia, unquote, and other scum, unquote, including homosexuals, feminists, and political leftists, and both hailed the Odessa massacre. According to the website of right sector leader Dmytro Yarov, it was, quote, another bright day in our national history, unquote. A Svoboda parliamentary deputy added, bravo, Odessa, let the devils burn in hell, unquote. If more evidence is needed, in December 2012, the European Parliament decried Svoboda's, quote, racist, anti-Semitic, and xenophobic views that go against the EU's fundamental values and principles. In 2013, the World Jewish Congress denounced Svoboda as neo-Nazi, unquote. Still worse, observers agreed that right sector is even more extremist. Nor do electoral results tell the story. Indeed, Svoboda and right sector already command power and influence for far exceeding their popular vote. Moderates, unquote, in the U.S.-backed Kiev government obliged to both movements for their violence-driven ascent to power and perhaps for their personal safety, rewarded Svoboda and right sector with some 5 to 8, depending on shifting affiliations, top ministry positions, including ones overseeing national security, military, prosecutorial, and educational affairs. Still more, according to the research of Pietro Shakarian, a remarkable young graduate student at the University of Michigan, Svoboda was given 5 governorships covering about 20% of the country. And this does not take into account the role of right sector in the, quote, anti-terrorist operation, unquote. Nor does it consider the political mainstreaming of fascism's dehumanizing ethos. In December of 2012, A Svoboda parliamentary leader anathematized the Ukrainian-born American actress Mila Kunis as, quote, a dirty kike, unquote. Since 2013, pro-Kiev mobs and militias have routinely denigrated ethnic Russians as insects, Colorado beetles whose colors resemble a sacred Russia ornament. More recently, the U.S. picked Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk referred to resistors in the southeast as, quote, subhumans, unquote. His defense minister proposed putting them in filtration camps pending deportation and raising fears of ethnic cleansing. Of course, his defense minister is Andrei Perobyi. Yulia Tymoshenko, a former prime minister, titular head of Yatsenyuk's party and runner-up in the May presidential election, was overheard wishing she could exterminate them all, Ukrainian Russians, with atomic weapons, unquote. Sterilization is among the less apocalyptic official musings on the pursuit of a purified Ukraine, unquote. Now, again, this is some of the background against which the downing of the Malaysian airliner occurred. Just very quickly, for the record, I don't know who shot it down, given the fact that the plane was flying through an aerial war zone. It was at 33,000 feet. Planes are forbidden to fly below 32,000 feet through that zone. Why they were permitted to fly through there at all is, I think, the fault of the Ukrainian government and their air controllers. It certainly is possible, I think, that Ukrainian rebels may have shot the plane down by mistake. That is unclear. I also think that it is very possible that this was a provocation. Again, I hold both possibilities open. There is a lot of information we are not hearing, such as the following from the Consortium News of July 19th of 2014 by Robert Perry, one of the few to question the official narrative. Airline horrors spur new rush to judgment, it reads in part. Regarding the shootdown of the Malaysian jetliner on Thursday, I'm told that some CIA analysts cite U.S. satellite reconnaissance photos suggesting that the anti-aircraft missile that brought down Flight 17 was fired by Ukrainian troops from a government battery, not by ethnic rebels who have been resisting the regime in Kiev since elected President Viktor Yanukovych was overthrown on February 22nd. According to a source briefed on the tentative findings, the soldiers manning the battery appeared to be wearing Ukrainian uniforms and may have been drinking, since what looked like beer bottles were scattered around the site. But the source added that the information was still incomplete and the analysts did not rule out the possibility of rebel responsibility. More from Robert Perry and Consortium News. This from the next day, July 20th of 2013. What did U.S. spy satellites see in Ukraine? Skipping down. What I've been told by one source who has provided accurate information on similar matters in the past is that U.S. intelligence agencies do have detailed satellite images of the likely missile battery that launched the fateful missile, but the battery appears to have been under the control of Ukrainian government troops dressed in what looked like Ukrainian uniforms. The source said CIA analysts were still not ruling out the possibility that the troops were actually Eastern Ukrainian rebels in similar uniforms, but the initial assessment was that the troops were Ukrainian soldiers. There also was the suggestion that the soldiers involved were undisciplined and possibly drunk, since the imagery showed what looked like beer bottles scattered around the site, the source said. Instead of pressing for these kinds of details, the U.S. mainstream press has simply passed on the propaganda coming from the Ukrainian government and the U.S. State Department, including hyping the fact that the book system is Russian-made, a rather meaningless fact that gets endlessly repeated. However, to use the Russian-made, unquote, point to suggest that the Russians must have been involved in the shootdown is misleading at best and clearly designed to influence ill-informed Americans. And skipping down again. In recognition of the key role played by the neo-Nazis, who were ideological descendants of Ukrainian militias that collaborated with the Nazi SS in World War II, the new regime gave these far-right nationalists control of several ministries, including the Office of National Security, which is under the command of longtime neo-Nazi activist Andrei Perobyi. It was the same Perobyi whom the Post Fletcher's have turned to seeking more information condemning the eastern Ukrainian rebels and the Russians regarding the Malaysia Airlines catastrophe. Terribly accused the rebels in the vicinity of the crash site of destroying evidence and conducting a cover-up, another theme that resounded through the mainstream media. Without bothering to inform readers of Parably's unsavory neo-Nazi background, the Post quoted him as a reliable witness declaring, quote, "It will be hard to conduct a full investigation with some of the objects being taken away, but we will do our best," unquote. And still more about the possible spinning of the satellite photos, again from Consortium News, this from July 22nd of 2014. Also from the heroic Robert Perry, we read, "The mystery of a Ukrainian army defector," unquote. And I'm going to preface this by saying one of the things that is not receiving a lot of coverage is that a lot of Ukrainian military personnel and whole units have defected to the, quote, rebels, unquote, for reasons we talked about in, for the record, 781, 783, and others. Again, "The Mystery of the Ukrainian Army Defector" by Robert Perry of Consortium News. And again, this showing the spin that appears to be being put on those satellite photos, which show Ukrainian military uniformed personnel firing the missile, not, quote, rebels, unquote. After last Thursday's shootdown, I was told that U.S. intelligence analysts were examining satellite imagery that showed that the crew manning the suspected missile battery were wearing what looked like Ukrainian army uniforms, but my source said the analysts were still struggling with whether that essentially destroyed the U.S. government's case, blaming the rebels. The Los Angeles Times article on Tuesday's briefing seemed to address the same information this way, quote, "U.S. intelligence agencies have so far been unable to determine the nationalities or identities of the crew that launched the missile. U.S. officials said it was possible the SA-11 anti-aircraft missile was launched by a defector from the Ukrainian military who was trained to use similar missile systems," unquote. The statement about a possible defector, unquote, might explain why some analysts thought they saw soldiers in Ukrainian army uniforms tending to the missile battery in eastern Ukraine. But there is another obvious explanation that the U.S. intelligence community seems unwilling to accept, that the missile may have been launched by someone working for the Ukrainian military. In other words, we may be seeing another case of the U.S. government fixing the intelligence, unquote, around the desired policy outcome, as occurred in the run-up to war in Iraq. And parenthetically, before moving on, remember that Iraq has the second largest proven oil reserves in the Middle East. Remember that 25% of all natural gas, proven natural gas reserves in the world are in the Ukraine, and most of those are in the eastern Ukraine. So as we see possible evidence of cooking intelligence to fit a preordained policy, remember the fossil fuels connection. That is one of the things that both Iraq and Ukraine have in common. Another thing we're not hearing much about that was noted in passing in the New York Times article is that Vladimir Putin's jet was flying back to Russia and went through almost exactly the same airspace about a half hour before. One of the possibilities, one thing I wonder about is whether perhaps drunken Ukrainian soldiers were actually trying to shoot down Vladimir Putin. We'll see. New York Times, July 19th, 2014, by Peter Baker. "With jet strike, war in Ukraine is felt globally," unquote. Mr. Putin was also in the air above Eastern Europe that afternoon as he was returning from a six-day tour of Latin America aboard his presidential Airbus, referred to as Aircraft Number 1 by the media. The Russian jet apparently passed near the doomed Malaysian plane, both flying in roughly the same airspace over Warsaw at 33,000 feet, some 37 minutes apart, according to an Interfax report. So again, were these Ukrainian soldiers who fired the missile, were they actually aiming at President Putin? Another of the questions that should be asked and is not being asked. a key detail, and this is going to serve as a transition to our discussion. You'll notice that two Malaysian Airlines planes have been destroyed, apparently as a result of deliberate human action within a few months. This will serve as something of a transition. One of the things that is also not being discussed are some of the particulars of the Buk SA-11 missile system that apparently shot this down. There have been references to Buk missile systems that have been captured from Ukrainian forces. There are conflicting reports. But the Buk missile system, the SA-11, not only requires the armored vehicle that has the missiles, but an accompanying armored vehicle that has the necessary radar and electronics to make the system operate properly. And there is no indication that the rebels have that control vehicle. One of the things that vehicle does is to distinguish between a military and a civilian plane because it can identify the civilian plane's transponder. This from Talking Points memo of July 19th, 2013, an article by Danica Kirka, K-I-R-K-A, and John Thor Dahlberg, D-A-H-L-B-U-R-G. A missile radar might have saved Malaysian plane, unquote. If Ukrainian rebels shot down the Malaysian airliner, killing 298 people, it may have been because they didn't have the right systems in place to distinguish between military and civilian aircraft, experts said Saturday. American officials said Friday that they believed the Boeing 777 was brought down by an SA-11 missile fired from an area of eastern Ukraine controlled by pro-Russian separatists. And skipping down again. But to function correctly, an SA-11 launcher, also known as a Buk, is supposed to be connected to a central radar command as opposed to acting alone to be certain of exactly what kind of aircraft it is shooting at. From the information that has come to light so far, the rebels don't appear to have such systems, said Pavel Felgenauer, a respected defense columnist for Novaya Gazeta, a Moscow-based newspaper known for its critical coverage of Russian affairs. They could easily make a tragic mistake and shoot down a passenger plane when indeed they wanted to shoot down a Ukrainian transport plane, he said. On Friday, Russia's state-owned RIA Novosti news agency also quoted Konstantin Sikov, S-I-V-K-O-V, director of the Academy of Geopolitical Problems, as saying Buk missiles, quote, should be provided with external systems of target identification, that is, radio location systems. It's an entire system, and the insurgents certainly don't have radio location. Without a backup, a missile can be fired by operators who are not totally sure of what they're aiming at. Quote, just seeing a blip on the radar screen was in no way sufficient to make a targeting decision, unquote, said Keir Giles, Associate Fellow for International Security and Russia and Eurasia programs at the Royal Institute of International Affairs. Quote, you need an additional radar system to which these weapon systems can be connected for additional information. And also a NATO intelligence officer speaking on condition of anonymity confirmed this as well. Now, I was fascinated by the fact that two Malaysian airliners were destroyed apparently by human action within a few months. Malaysian Airlines is not one of the world's largest airlines. We talked about the, quote, disappearance, unquote, of Malaysian Air Flight 70 and the fact that the plane was almost certainly brought down as a result of actions within the cockpit. Both the flight computer and other things were manipulated from inside of the cockpit. The pilot of that plane was Zahari Shah, a close political follower of Anwar Ibrahim, a Malaysian Muslim Brotherhood and former prime minister, who was one of the co-founders of the International Institute for Islamic Thought, the IIIT, which is one of the institutions that was raided in the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002, and those raids basically linked the financing of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad directly to people like Carl Rove, Grover Norquist, and Amelia of Harkin Energy, and George W. Bush, a former Harkin director and a political ally and personal friend of both Georges Bush. Talat Othman was director of the Islamic Institute of the Islamic Free Market Institute, founded by Grover Norquist. He interceded directly on behalf of the people and institutions raided on March 20th, 2002. And again, Anwar Ibrahim, a Malaysian Muslim brother and former prime minister, whose political follower, the captain of the Malaysian Air Flight 370, the pilot was a political disciple of Anwar Ibrahim. Anwar Ibrahim was a consulting client of Grover Norquist's Janus Merit Strategies. Now remember, Anwar Ibrahim, Zahari Shah, the pilot of Malaysian Air Flight 370, almost certainly involved in the disappearance of that plane. Remember the IIIT, Operation Green Quest, Anwar Ibrahim, Grover Norquist, and listen to the following. Now, as the story of the downing of MH Flight 17 unfolded, the media's sort of go-to guy, in addition to Andrei Parubyi, the National Security Commander, basically head of the Ukrainian National Security and Defense Council, and a Nazi from Svoboda, was a guy named Michael Bosyurku, and I'm probably mispronouncing that. That's Michael or Mikhailo, B-O-C as in cat, I-U-R-K-I-W. I do a little searching around, and sure enough, he's not only Ukrainian, but he is from Canada, and he is the head of the OSCE mission in Ukraine. OSCE is the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. ABC News, July 21st of 2014, article reportage by Simon Santow, S-A-N-T-O-W. OSCE describes process for identifying bodies from MH17 attack, again by Simon Santow, skipping down. The OSCE has told AM it has finally obtained better access on the ground near the site where MH17 was shot down in eastern Ukraine. The spokesman for the special monitoring mission in Ukraine, Michael Bosyurku, says they have seen some remains and bodies stored in refrigerated rail wagons in the town of Torez, T-O-R-E-S. So again, Michael Bosyurku, the head of the special monitoring mission of the OSCE, has been sort of the media's go-to guy with the regard to the crash of MH17. He also, again, is Ukrainian from Canada. He also was a writer for and assistant editor of a publication called The Ukrainian Weekly. That publication has its issues on PDF archives online. I've put a few links into the description. The publication has a very obvious pro-OUNB, anti-OSI, and pro-Republican ethnic, Republican heritage groups body. The OSI, the Office of Special Investigations, was the Justice Department unit to investigate Nazi war criminals who were brought into the U.S. At the end of World War II to work on our intelligence system and Project Paperclip. It was formerly headed by John Loftus, a frequent guest on this program. He resigned when he saw so many of the people that he was investigating taking positions within the Reagan administration. The Republican Heritage Groups Council is basically the Nazi wing of the Republican Party that grew out of the Crusade for Freedom. On the legal domestic covert operation, it was the brainchild of Alan Dulles, overseen by Richard Nixon. Its chief spokesperson was Ronald Reagan, and the guy who handled the State Department machinations for that was William Casey, Ronald Reagan's campaign manager and later CIA director. It was installed as a permanent branch of the Republican Party in the early 1970s, when the Elbert George Bush, for whom CIA headquarters is named, was the head of the Republican National Committee. And again, Michael Bashuku, the head of the special monitoring mission of the OSCE and the media's go-to guy, so to speak, was an assistant editor and writer for the very obviously pro-OUND, anti-OSI, pro-Republican Heritage Groups Council, Ukrainian Weekly. That was the focal point of a letter that was sent by the General Counsel for the World Jewish Congress, Eli Rosenbaum, on February 2nd of 1987 to Ms. Janet Bendon, B-E-N-D-O-N. And the letter reads in part as follows. Enclosed in accordance with your request at this date is a nearly complete run of the Ukrainian Weekly. Skipping down, as I indicated on the phone, Michael Bashuku is a frequent contributor to the newspaper. Indeed, one of his articles appears on the front page of the oldest of the enclosed issues under the byline, Mikhailo Bashuku. The December 15, 1985 edition reports that he has been named assistant editor of the newspaper. As you can see, I have made a practice of noting on the front page of each of those pages which contains articles of interest. In any event, the anti-OSI, anti-Nazi prosecution bias in Bashuku's written output and in the newspaper generally will be regularly apparent as you read through the enclosed issue. So the point is that Michael Bashuku has a pro-OUN affiliation. He also was the editor of and wrote an introduction to a book called Mahathir, 22 Years and 22 Voices. Mohamed Mahathir was a former prime minister of Malaysia, close to the Muslim Brotherhood, and a raving anti-Semite. Another of the introductions was written by Abdullah Badawi, another Malaysian prime minister, and also an anti-Semite. And in a website called Unmasking the Muslim Brotherhood in America, one of the people who has an article about him is Mohammed M. Abdul Rauf. Both Mohammed Mahathir and Abdullah Badawi were protégés of Mohammed M. Abdul Rauf, who was a student of Hassan al-Banna. And in turn, Mohammed M. Abdul Rauf was very, very close to a fellow who was one of the guy named Ismail R. al-Faruqi, who, like Anwar Ibrahim, was a co-founder of the International Institute for Islamic Thought. So in the milieu with which Michael Bashuku networks, we find, again, links going back to Malaysian Muslim Brotherhood and the International Institute of Islamic Thought, going on to Al-Taqwa and Operation Green Quest, all of which proves nothing, but we do have the head of the OSCE and the press's go-to guy networking with OUND on the other, on one hand, and Malaysian Muslim Brothers linked to the milieu of disappearance of Flight 370 on the other. There are also articles on this in the description, noting that among the people who disappeared or were killed in the crash of MH17 was sort of the creme de la creme of the world's AIDS researchers. And also a fellow, a Dutch cyclist, was booked on both flights, both the Malaysian Air Flight 370 and the MH17 flight, and changed his reservations at the last minute, which proves nothing but is extremely unlikely. One of the questions I have about MH17, might the transponder that would identify that aircraft as a civilian aircraft have been turned off in the cockpit? Was the pilot a possible jihadist? And I also, again, wonder about the fact that both the anti-gay and generally reactionary Ukrainians in Kiev and Muslim Brotherhood might have rejoiced at seeing some AIDS researchers deep sixed on the plane. In any event, I've had to attenuate some of the recent arguments. All of these points are set forth at length and in detail in the description for the record program 803, which now comes to a conclusion. This wraps up side two of for the record program number 803, Walk on the Snake in Ukraine. This has been recorded on July 27th of 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.